All right, I'm with Robert Scoble, who is, you know, geek blogger extraordinaire from Microsoft and also a technical evangelist there. Robert, welcome.
Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for having me over.
And Robert, I know that Dave Weiner was the guy who sort of started you onto blogging.
One of them, yeah.
One of them.
Yeah.
But how did you make the move to Microsoft, and how did you ever convince them to endorse blogging?
Well,
or do they?
I don't know. Bomber has a lot of fun. Yeah, he says, I couldn't stop it anyway. they already had 80 bloggers or 100 bloggers when I got there. So they had already started the process of, you know, letting people blog or even encouraging them to blog. And I just added fuel to the fire because I brought in an irreverent style of blogging.
Right.
You know, and outside of the company kind of, you know, I had told Bill Gates to split up the company, you know, and so I added fuel because by me blogging and getting away with it, it's like, wait a second, we hired this guy who said to split up the company, and he's getting away with it. He's allowed to blog, you know, in that kind of style.
So you didn't ask for permission. So this was not a premeditated thing. You just started doing it one day.
Well, I was blogging for 5 years, and I've only worked at Microsoft for 2.5, right? So I'd been blogging for 2.5 years before I got to Microsoft, and they hired me partly because of my blog, not totally because of it, but yeah, he noticed that Vic Condotra is the guy who hired me, and he bought a tablet PC from me after finding me in a tablet PC news group, and I was helping customers out there, and he bought a tablet from me, and then over the next 4 months, he was reading. I told him about my blog, and he was reading that, and then he said, "Why didn't you know? You ever think of coming up to Microsoft and doing this for us?"
So he had no idea what he was getting himself into. Did he?
No, he I think he knew. He knew exactly what he was getting himself into because he was reading me every day and saw what I was doing.
Right.
And saw also the blogging world was getting bigger and bigger, and more important to pay attention to. And so I know he knew what he's doing. I'm not sure that the rest of the company understood just how much change he was putting into play.
Got it.
Yeah.
So your title is technical evangelist at Microsoft,
yep.
And you know I keep seeing on Wikipedia you have the title, you know, chief blogging officer.
Yeah, that's not true. Somebody get that to me. That's the fun thing about Wikipedia. You know, the community can rewrite your history, right?
So what is your job description? Is blogging in your job description?
Not really. My day job, well, sort of. My day job is doing this video blog for Microsoft.
So right, the Channel 9 stuff.
Yeah, so I do exactly what you're doing here. I go around with a camcorder and I interview people about what they're working on and ask them a lot of stupid questions and see if they what kinds of answers they give me back, and I put those up. You know, in fact, I just got the video up of Bungie.
And, oh, awesome! We can definitely check that out.
And the Xbox team. You know, so I went over to the Xbox team and said, "Show me the new Xbox." I'm hearing all these hype. I want to see what you guys have been doing for the last 3 years.
Cool.
And they'd show me around and they'd talk to me and they, you know, basically they ask all this, answer all the same questions they would answer anyway, right? With the press or, you know, or with, you know, even another blogger or an MVP or a good customer.
Right.
You know, so I just put it on video and put it out in the world, and last month we had 2.7 million unique visitors. So
how do you know if you're being successful? Is that how you measure it? Is by how many visitors come to the site? Is it?
I hate that measure because it's like I put up the video of the MSN search team on Friday, and Danny Sullivan and John Battelle both linked to it.
Mm-hmm.
That to me means I'm more successful than it. Because those are the two guys in the industry who are the search experts, you know, who are the community experts, who are, you know, who are watching the search world, and getting those two guys to say this is a good video, that means a lot to me, you know. It's
right.
More, and yeah, that brings traffic, right? So having those two guys linked to you brings traffic, but it brings very, very focused traffic, which is what I'm really after. In fact, one of our employees writes a food blog, and he compared his traffic that he got from various, like from O'Reilly, because O'Reilly linked to him one time, and he compared all the link and did some analysis on it, and he found that a small little food blog sent him better traffic than any other You know, even he was in the Seattle newspaper, right? The Seattle newspaper didn't send him very much traffic because they're going to a mass audience, and the mass audience is sort of halfway interested. It's
right.
You know, when you're reading, when you're watching TV, you know, you're sort of, I'm sort of interested in it. You know, you're not committed. You're not really passionate about that news story. Where if you're reading a niche oriented blog on something like golfing or food or scrapbooking or computers, like if you're reading me, you're reading that because you're committed to it. You're passionate about it. You're engaged on that, and that makes you a far better reader than.
So basically, you're trying to get successful good readers is more important to you than a lot of readers.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
How do you know if you're getting good readers?
They tell me. You know, and you know, when you start getting email from Steve Jobs or from
you got good readers.
From venture capitalists or from Dan Gilmore, who used to work for the San Jose Mercury News, or if you're getting interesting feedback, if you're getting, if people who are doing stuff that you look up to are writing you and saying, I like your blog, that tells me a lot.
Cool. Is there a marketing guy that tells you what to blog about, or, on Channel 9, like, do they say, like, okay, we got this launch.
Yeah, there's a whole team assigned to me to following me around, telling me what to do. At 2 in the morning when I'm blogging, there's a whole team of people going, oh my God, what's Google going to do now? No. No, I mean, part of the thing about Microsoft is hire smart people and let them do their job, you know, and that's why our blogging policy, we don't have a blogging policy, we have a policy that says be smart, where a lot of other companies were like, oh, you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't do this, and you can't, it's like, if you hire smart people and then you empower them with information and you sort of tell them, hey, these are the rules, these aren't. Okay, so what else do you need to do?
So tell me, what's the most uncomfortable moment you've had at Microsoft in regards to your blog or Channel 9? Has there ever been a moment where somebody was like, dude, you're the line, you were close to the line there, when you talk about breaking up the company, were people?
I never got crap for that. I had some interesting argument, not really, but debates were about, would that be really a good thing to do? And yeah, there's two sides to that one. When I did stuff like telling people that they should be fired for not having RSS feeds, that caused a backlash because that was, not politically correct, right? It's not nice to tell somebody they should be fired, particularly when they're on your team,
Sure.
It's infighting, and people get very uncomfortable with that. But here's something I tell people. If you're going to do something like that, if you're going to write in a way that you're taking on a machine or taking on a political system or, doing something like that, you better do it with an end goal. You better do it with a reason in mind. And you better be willing to pay the consequences. Rosa Parks died yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. She knew the consequences of sitting in the back of that bus and trying to change society. And she was willing to do that because she had an end goal in mind, a different world that she wanted to live in.
Sure.
And the same thing goes when you're writing a corporate blog. If you take risks like that, you better have an end goal in mind and be able to explain it to people and be able to sell it to people. The people who've gotten fired for blogging, like the Mark Jens and Delta Airlines.
The stewardess blog thing.
I don't think they did that stuff with a real good corporate end goal. Mark Jens, I've interviewed him. I go and hang out with him. I don't think he never has been able to articulate the corporate change that he was trying to enact through his writing. Where everything I do, I have a very real sense of where I want to go, and I know I'm taking, when I tell Steve Ballmer.
There's a secret agenda behind your blog.
No, I'm pretty transparent about the intern. You know, when I say you should be fired for not having an RSS feed, I think it's pretty clear what I'm trying to do, and I'm trying to get the company to see that RSS is important, and to get people out of, you know, the rut that they're in, and get them to see that there's a new rut over here that's far bigger and far more important to get into. You know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, shake people up and get them to see a new world that I see, you know. And so, I, because I'm down here in the valley a lot, I get to see some of this stuff. And I get to warn, you know, the guys up in Redmond, hey, you know, so Google's kicking your ass, you know.
So let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. You know, yeah, switching gears for a bit, why does it take so long for Microsoft to get software out there these days? You know, Google seems to crank stuff out like, you know, their desktop search and toolbars pretty quickly. Is this just a perception issue? Is it my imagination?
Partly it's reality. I mean, there's three ways to come at it. One is installed base. Google doesn't have an installed base yet, and so they can change like that. They can come up with something. When you don't have customers,
right,
you can do amazing things, right? A good example is Hotmail, right? Hotmail had 2 megabytes per customer. They have 200 million people on two megabytes or something like that. And Google comes along and goes, hey, we're going to give everybody 2 gigabytes. You know, they have no users. So they could grow their data centers organically as customers came into their system. If we want to change 200 million people to 2 gigabytes or 10 gigabytes now, you have to go from a data center that's 100,000 square feet to one that's many times that size. And that's a far different problem than, you know, starting out with 7 servers and then making it 14 and making it 21 and then making it, you know, and growing as you, you know, and just keep calling Dell and plugging in another couple of servers. And people forget that Microsoft is on a different scale than most other companies are at. That said, we're gonna react within a year. You know,
okay.
You're seeing the new Hotmail. I'm playing with the new Hotmail. It's better than Gmail. It has just as much storage. The user interface is really nice.
When will we all get to play with the new Hotmail?
The beta is out now, so you know a few 100,000 people are going to be getting it by the end of the year. But the 200 million people next year sometime.
Okay.
So it takes a while, and you know, so we're adopting some of their techniques of, hey, let's flow this out a little bit at a time.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like an invite system almost, and turn over our 200 million people into a new system.
Sure.
Another thing is, the expectations on our stuff is way higher than other companies. We have to be secure out of the box. If we ship another product that has a virus problem or has a security flaw, the customers are not going to be forgiving this time around. Where, you know, Firefox came out, there's a lot of bugs in Firefox. And people give them slack, you know, cut them some slack because, one, they don't have the market share and they don't have the expectations, the kind of thing.
Okay.
And the third thing is the development model. They're now building dependencies on other teams that are tough to work on. You know, there's thousands of people who are working on Windows right now, and those are big problems. You know, we're building software on a scale that is pretty daunting when you walk around Microsoft and see how many people, you know, when you go to a dinner, when everybody's there, it's like, wow, all these people work on Windows. It's like, you know, when you go to a company meeting and you take over a baseball stadium for your company meeting, it's like, wow, that's a different scale of problem than, you know, the Google Earth team, which is a few people.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And people forget that there are so many dependencies and teams have to wait for another team to finish, you know, before they can go on. And sometimes they block.
So you think Google's going to end up in that sort of same position over time?
If they start integrating, you know, and integrating is powerful because look at how MSN Spaces got to tens of millions of users in 6 months, right? They integrated Instant Messenger, you know, the MSN Messenger. So it, when you're in MSN Messenger, if you log on your MSN Space, there's a little icon in MSN Messenger. Well, there's 200 million people who use 180 million people who use MSN Messenger. And that brought 20 million people like that over to MSN Spaces.
Sure.
And Google's going to try to do that as well. They're going to try to integrate more and more of their empire together, you know. And as they build integration points, you build dependencies, and you slow down two teams. Teams get a little bit slower because, you know, when you're a team by yourself, you can ship fast. But when you have to wait for another team to ship with a little icon that links into yours, you, and that's a simple dependency, right? And imagine the dependencies that we just shipped, you know, SQL Server hosting the .NET CLR. That's a huge dependency with two huge teams, billion-dollar businesses that are working together. That's not a little icon anymore. That's, you know, a lot of people having a ton of meetings and having a lot of code reviews and having a lot of dependencies on each other. You know, and one team can't ship until the other team gets done.
Sure.
You know.
So the you know,
which is why SQL Server hasn't shipped since 2000. You know, it's been a while.
So speaking of SQL Server, I mean, you know, one of the sort of well-known facts in the Valley, if you're a startup, is you don't use Microsoft stuff. You go use the open source stuff because it's
I don't
cheap
know.
And easy and fast.
That's
and
probably
you,
the
you,
predominant.
You can blog
viewpoint.
About it.
Yeah, that's the predominant viewpoint. There still is a lot of startups I meet who do use Microsoft stuff. But
is Microsoft worried? Like, does Microsoft say, "Oh my God, there's this perception now that you know, whether it's a reality or not, that you know all these folks are running around with MySQL and Apache."
Yeah, I'm worried. You know,
do the other guys get that?
Yeah, they do. And they try to react to it. I mean, on November 7th, we're releasing Visual Studio and SQL Server Express editions, which are very, very low-cost editions for hobbyists and for entrepreneurs to get into the system without paying a price. You know, so that is a direct reaction to feedback from entrepreneurs who say, "I can't. You know, I'm a college kid, and I want to start a little tiny business." I can't afford to start it when you charge me $1,000, you know? I don't have that much money to buy a PowerBook, you know? In fact, Kevin Burton, who I met the other day, he's going around Silicon Valley right now, selling data that's for $20 to buy a server.
Sure.
You know, so, and that's the mentality of the entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley. Memorandum was just started, right, by one guy. And, you know, he's trying to build something, you know, and that's the Silicon Valley dream, you know. I grew up here when Wozniak and Jobs started this little company, you know, and before that it was Hewlett and Packard, you know, in their garage. I mean, and the Yahoo kids, you know, went to Stanford and met in college and started this little list that grew into a multi-billion dollar business. You know, the two kids from Google and just 7 years ago met at Stanford and, you know, started a little project on 7 servers, you know, and that's the Silicon Valley dream. That's the, you know, hey, let's get something going and build something cool that's gonna change the world.
Right.
You know? So yeah, so we want to be involved, you know.
So now that Google and Yahoo are really, you know, sort of pushing their APIs and web services, do you think they'll get to the point where they're courting developers as aggressively as Microsoft is? Is that a worry for you guys?
Absolutely. I worry about it all the time. And I think you're already starting to see, you know, Virtual Earth has APIs. MSN Messenger now has APIs. They never had APIs before. What other things? InfoPath is out. You know, they demoed InfoPath to me on my camcorder on Firefox, showing it that even the Office team was getting the web. You know, Xbox 360 has a whole web thing that's coming up this Friday, you know, turning on this Friday.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How does Microsoft feel? And I asked this question to the Yahoo guys too, but how does Microsoft feel about having its data and functionality used alongside, say, Google data and functionality? Is that something that you guys would allow?
I think if you're going to be a platform player, you have to be comfortable with other people getting rich on top of your platform, you know? if you build a foundation, if you're a house foundation maker, you better be happy that somebody builds a mansion on top of your foundation, you know?
Okay.
And the same thing, if you're going to build APIs that you want people to use, you better be willing for those APIs to be used in ways that you might not even have thought about, you know? And certainly I see that happen. That's why I love the developer community, because you give people something cool to use, and then they, you know, like Google Earth or Google Maps took, some kid took Craigslist and mixed it with Google Maps and made something new. And
so why aren't we seeing more mashups with Microsoft services and APIs yet?
Because like I think
hear,
we're coming,
you hear all about the Google ones, and
I think they're out there. If you go to Via Virtual Earth, you see a ton of them. You're seeing a ton of them on MSN Messenger. They're just not. I think that the it's not as sexy, you know, to say, oh, I built something on Microsoft, you know. And also we're a little bit late, you know.
Okay.
And if you come in, like Virtual Earth came in, what, 3 or 6 months late to, compared to Google Maps, you know. And so you're struggling
right.
to get back the mojo, the momentum.
What do you think about the fact that, you know, Google is really starting to be viewed as evil now in some cases? You know, they're sort of, they're not the underdog.
Welcome to the club! Welcome to the big company evil club where, you know, when, you know, there's a cultural thing going on. When you're the Yankees, you're hated. You know, when you're the guy with all the money and all the smart people and, you know, and the market share, you know, you're hated. And there's certain things you can do to get people back involved, you know, and I'm trying to do that. You know, that's why I do the camcorder. I think that's why the camcorder thing works. It's mm-hmm. not, it's unprofessional video. It's, you know, I go into the search team and it's all shaky because I'm like holding it, you know, and it's like, there's no lights, there's no makeup, there's no, you know, it's just a conversation. And that gets you back into it. You know, it's like, okay, you know, these guys are real and they're just like me, you know. They're trying to do something too, you know, just like I am in my garage. I think that humanizes it, you know. And,
right.
and Google hasn't figured out how to put a human face to their company yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll figure that out. I'm not too worried about it.
So
they're trying to do big things, you know. When you try to do big things, you piss people off. You know? I said that on my blog to Adam Bosworth, you know. When you tell people that they should be fired for not having an RSS feed, that pisses people off, you know.
Sure.
And they're trying to do just even bigger things. They're trying to put the whole library into a computer system, and they have big dreams, and when you have big dreams like that, they're in conflict with other people's big dreams, and
mm-hmm.
so there's going to be, you know, back and forth. You know?
So what is the what
that's
is
why
the...
I love the Valley. The Valley's ideas. You know? It's the clash of ideas. You know, my view of the world is maybe a little different than your view of the world, and those ideas fight out, and the best idea wins. You know, it's
the cool part about being here.
Yeah.
So what does the future hold for you? You're this respected corporate blogger for one of the largest companies on the planet. What do you?
I don't know.
What's the career path of a Robert Scoble?
I'm having a ball. I mean, I don't want to mess it up. I'm having a ball. I get to go around and meet, you know, and have chats with people who are building cool stuff, and I get to see the inside of a big company in a way that very few other people do. Even executives at Microsoft don't even get to see it in the way I'm getting to see it. You know, how many people really get to go across Microsoft and see, you know, 500 people, you know, from across Microsoft? Bill does, you know, Steve Ballmer does.
And Robert Scoble does.
Yeah, a few other people do, you know. I don't know where I take it. I mean, there's so many possible paths. It's hard to predict where I'll be in a year, you know, or 2 years or 5 years. I want to see Windows Vista ship, and then after that, I'll see, you know, what paths are there
right.
to take down and head down another path. You know, but the blogging thing is just, you know, that's been a wild ride. You know, it's the world's best relationship building device I've ever seen, and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to Paris and You know, yesterday I spoke to, you know, Monster Cable, and I've spoken to Boeing and Target, and just to relate, I'm going to speak at Google this week, you know. You know, they invited me to speak to their customers, you know, what a trap, you know. You know, and just because I write every night, and I'm passionate about the tech world, and, you know, that's, I don't know where it goes from here. You know, it's already exceeded all the dreams I ever had. You know, when I started blogging, I had no idea I'd be doing, you know, I'd be walking around Microsoft with a camcorder and in all these magazines and being interviewed by guys like you.
Sure.
It's nutty. It really is crazy. But it shows what can happen when you hitch onto a disruptive technology early. And, you know, you can certainly see how people get rich, how they get, you know, known. And I don't know, I'm just going to keep writing, I guess. And so I still love it. I still love talking to people about tech and trying out things and trying to get them to see where the world might go.
Right. So I'm going to ask you the same question that you asked Steve Ballmer, which is if you were me, what question would you be asking?
You're going to ask me the hard question. I asked that question because I just know he gets asked questions all day long, and you know he's been asked questions like that for 20 and the hardest questions people can come up with for 20 years, and they learn how to answer tough questions. You know, they have already a little memory. Like, if I get asked this question, I'm going to give them this answer, you know, and it's going to be, or even like when you watch a presidential debate, right? They are so professional at answering tough questions that they won't even answer the question. They'll turn it into something else. Like, you should have asked me about this, and turn the whole conversation into the direction that they wanted to go in anyway. So I figured, I'm an amateur at this game. What am I gonna do to get him, you know, stumped or whatever? So I figured I'd just let him ask his own tough question.
And so I'm turning it around.
What, yeah.
Because you're in the same position now where you've sort of gotten all your hard questions and your regular answers. What's the question that people don't ask you that you think they should?
Ooh.
And for the folks on audio, you can't see it. Robert Scoble's like,
thinking
hard.
It's a
now.
Tough question to answer because it's just tough. Will Microsoft turn out to be like DEC or like, oh God, what's all the other computer companies
all the guys
in the yeah, in the Computer History Museum over here, you know, there's a ton of computer names that used to be big that are just gone, you know? And I think that's the challenge, is how do we remain relevant and put out great product that people want to buy? I think blogging made it possible to be a 100-year company, because now guys like me can actually talk to customers and customers can find the person who runs the small team. You know, if you go to OneNote blog on Google, which is sort of funny, you find Chris Pratley, who runs the OneNote team now.
Huh.
And now you have a way to talk to him and tell him your product sucks, or your product needs this, or, you know, it goes this far, but I need this extra stuff. If you did that, it would solve a business problem or something like that. And he's already noticing it's changed his approach to product development. And I think that's the business decision that whoever made it, I think it was actually Steve Ballmer made it. I think in 10 or 15 years is going to turn out to be a brilliant business decision. I think that's going to be the thing that keeps Microsoft around and relevant for 100 years. Because now you don't need to, it's not Bill Gates running the company. It's Chris Pratley. It's Larry Herb on the Xbox team. It's, you know, you can have individual relationships with people directly on the product teams in a very deep way, which I think, you know, 10 years from now, it's going to be studied in business schools as a pretty interesting decision, and one that most corporate types just are scared of making. They're very scared. Every time I talk to a company, I see fear. We can't let our, you know, secretary blog. God, we have to control.
People haven't read Clue Train yet.
Yeah, well, they have, but they don't understand the power that's on the other side. That when you let your when you empower your employees to actually, you know, change the business.
Right.
That it's very empowering, and I think we're just starting to see some of that change. I mean, we got a lot of PR just for being first, because anytime you're first, you get PR. That's sort of back to the Google thing. When you're first, you get a lot of PR. But the real lasting change is who comes second and third and fourth, and what happens then. What happens after the first wave, you know? And that's why I'm really excited about having 2,000 people or 3,000 people blogging. Yeah.
Cool. Well, Robert Scoble, thank you so much for spending some time, and wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
All right.